The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
If you're easily offended, this show may not be for you.
But if you're into that weird fun sh- you've come to the right place.
You've been warned.
Are you there?
I'm Chris. I'm the believer.
I'm Cody. I'm the skeptic. Okay, stories. Let's get into it.
Hello! Welcome to BSP Believer Skeptic Podcast.
The podcast where two idiots debate weird phenomena.
I'm Chris, I'm the believer.
I'm Cody, I'm the skeptic.
And if this is your first time listening to us, we are an LGBTQ paranormal comedy podcast and proud members of the Podmoth Network. And this is a full episode.
Yeah, and this is a special holiday episode.
That it is. This is our fourth annual Valentine's
Day. I'm trying to remember.
I don't know if we did one every year.
Yeah, do we skip? We might have skipped one.
Either way, this is a tradition now. So
our ex-annual Valentine's Day special.
Yeah, and this topic...
it's
hard to explain, but basically...
It took a turn, right?
Yeah, it spawned from me wanting to do kind of like breaking down like urban legends. Specifically, I was thinking of like Lover's Lane's urban legends that we all know about. Those. So it spawned from that. And then we had other ideas, and then we came back to this one, and... I don't know what your story is, but my story definitely relates to that.
So, okay. So I kind of considered the topic to be couples / marriage.
Love and marriage.
Love and marriage. There we go. Love.
Married with children.
Marriage. Because mine is paranormal aspects to it, but it's not like Lover's Lane, you know, where a couple drives off a bridge and then they haunt you forever.
Yeah. Mine is true crime, and it's all true crime. I'm actually only covering one story today.
And so the interesting thing about this is our topic is on couples, and Chris and I both, without even realizing it, each only did one story.
Yeah, and didn't
so we
know
have
that.
A couple of stories for this episode. How perfect. We can act like we did that on purpose.
Yeah. And this one I've heard about it, but I didn't know it was like a Lover's Lane kind of legend. So that's what made it
very
cool.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and just speaking ahead, content warning, I do speak of some violent deaths and some assault as well. So,
okay.
So just so you know.
And mine has a true crime element to it mixed with all the crap that's going on. And also like our Valentine specials, though, I must say, because of how much Chris hates Valentine's.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun to... Which to dive into it.
Ironic this year, but that's a whole different story.
Oh, really? Why is it ironic? Chris has a special someone in his life.
I'm seeing
Let
somebody.
Everyone be happy for him.
But anyways.
So back... he's got to do Valentine stuff this year.
All right. Anyways.
He's blushing.
So, yes, I am. So back to our show. Drinks?
Oh, I have no idea where we're at. Okay. We're thinking of that. We're talking about all this dirty stuff like our old episodes are.
And this one's not.
Well,
at
not
least
dirty,
that means my story
but
isn't.
But sitting on the table is a little thing of lotion.
It's not.
And
it's
I'm like,
shampoo.
Chris, what are you doing with this?
It's shampoo.
Oh, never mind.
It just looks like a lotion bottle.
Okay. Anyway,
but it's shampoo.
Do you want to go first?
Okay, sure. So, I mean, it was easy for this because, like, you just look up mocktail Valentine's Day.
And yeah.
This one is fun, though. I made one for you, too, just so if you want to taste it. It's I just call it a slush. It's just a combination of non-alcoholic champagne, strawberries, and then I just blended that up into a slush.
It's so pretty, y'all. I want to get a picture. It's got, he rimmed the glass with, like, pink and red sparkle, like glitter, sprinkles.
Sugar?
God, I couldn't remember the name of it. Sugar.
Okay, let's try this bad boy.
I rimmed the glass. I will take a picture and then you'll see.
Oh, that's great.
Is it good?
That's delicious. Oh, yeah, I'll just have that.
All right.
And while he's taking a picture, I'm going to get mine out. And I'm trying to remember if I've done this one before.
But okay.
It's a beer I really like. And it's really just because of Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got Sex Panther.
I don't think you have.
Have I not? But this is, Sex Panther's a reference to Anchorman, right? Where it's the,
I've never seen all of Anchorman. I know parts of it.
There's a cologne that smells like Bigfoot's dick.
Yes, I know that line.
It's my favorite. All right, so well, I have a couple of drinks.
Yes.
So why don't you talk about couples?
Well,
in history,
since this is our ex-annual Valentine's special, I'm running out of material for history. I mean, you can't really run out of material, but I had a harder time thinking of something that would relate. So sure. With that, I decided to look into love and marriage rituals in different cultures. The first one will take us back to a connection of our previous episode as it comes from Finland.
Hmm.
If you're partnered in the small village of Sonkajärvi,
nice.
they have an interesting sporting event for you. Each year, competitors gather in this Finnish village with their partner slung over their shoulder. These competitors then must complete a variety of challenges with the person over their shoulder.
I know about this. I've seen video of this.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
And if you win, you will receive your partner's weight in beer.
Oh, okay. That's
amongst
great.
Other accolades, but that's pretty amazing. Yeah. Now in China, on the wedding day, when a groom comes to meet his bride, he will be blocked from seeing her, usually by the bridesmaids and sometimes the groomsmen. The wedding party then demands money from the groom and subject him to doing some silly things such as singing or other fun in order to prove his love to the bride.
Oh, well, that's super cute.
Yeah. So, like as Cody said, since I'm not the biggest fan of Valentine's Day, I am kind of glad to, I don't live in Korea, among other reasons, but in Korea.
Like North Korea, you mean? Like you have to have Kim Jong-un's face on your wife when you make love to her?
In Korea, Valentine's Day isn't just on February 14th. Well, it is, but instead, the 14th day of every month has some romantic significance, such as Hug Day in December or Kiss Day in June.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. That being said, on February 14th, per Korean tradition, the women are the only ones that give the gifts on that day.
Oh, the women are?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, if you partake in this next tradition, you may literally shit yourself. you see, in one of the indigenous groups of Borneo, after a couple marries, the couple are not allowed to leave their house for 3 days and three nights.
Well, you have bathrooms in your house, right?
Not even to use the bathroom.
Wait. But you're not, you can't leave your house.
I don't know. I that's all it said. I didn't look through.
Maybe they have outhouses or something.
Who knows? But they're not allowed to use, not even to use the bathroom. They're also given a strict diet and are constantly supervised. This tradition is said to bring good luck to the couple in marriage.
Wait, are they supposed to be doing it the whole time?
I don't know. I don't know if it's to consummate the marriage or what it is, but I mean, after spending
the marriage?
Consummate.
I mean, if it's three days.
Oh, yeah. I mean, after spending 3 days and three nights with each other, like going to the bathroom, I think you sure as hell better be comfortable with each other.
Oh, that's actually a really good point.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
I am so poo shy that it would really be the constipating my marriage.
The next part, tradition is part of some African tribes in which some parents will have a specific courting hut for their daughter where she can meet potential mates away from the eyes of her parents. And in Cambodia, they also do something similar in which the teens are encouraged to use their specified place to explore socially and sexually.
To explore? Yeah. Oh, that's so open. I really like that.
Yeah, this is in hope of them finding their one true love.
Oh, you know? Cool. Okay. Yeah. All for sexual freedom and openness.
Yeah. And you know how many people ask for a sign that they're marrying the right person, right? Mm-hmm. Well, in China, the Dower people have a tradition in which couples who get engaged must dissect a chicken together and inspect the liver. If they see that the liver is healthy, this is a good sign and a kind of blessing, so a marriage date can then be set. If the liver is not in good shape, they must continue mutilating chickens until they find a good one.
No.
Yeah. I mean, maybe not all in one sitting, but...
Just like a row of chickens.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
This next tradition comes from Wales, which I think is actually really adorable. In the Welsh tradition, a person will present their love interest with a ornately carved wooden spoon that they carve themselves. The spoon is a symbol to promise to feed and provide to their love for life.
Oh, that's really cute.
If the lover returns the spoon, that means the feeling is not mutual. But if they keep it, that means they accept the this kind of proposal and then must wear the spoon around their neck for the next few days.
Oh, okay, so it kind of replaces, it's cheaper than a wedding ring.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure, though, that given capitalism, someone's going to have, like, Kay's Jeweler spoons. Yeah. Where it's, like, $10,000 spoons. Yeah. That's a really cute one. Do you have to, like, get a little jar of Gerber baby food and, like...
I don't know how big the spoon is, you know. Yeah. It's like one of those giant spoons you hang, like, in your kitchen, you know?
Get ready, honey.
Yeah. Lastly, I wanted to talk about a few traditions I knew growing up in New Mexico. New Mexico obviously has traditions that come from Mexico, the indigenous groups of the area, and of course, Spanish colonizers. I bring that up just to say that some of these traditions can be found in other cultures as well, you know. So one tradition is that following the wedding at the reception, once party guests arrives, they anxiously wait for the bride and groom to arrive. Once they arrive, a processional march called La Marcha takes place where everyone and anybody can participate in, and everybody just makes a processional around the dance floor and stuff.
Fun. So you've done that?
Yeah. I've done that before. Like I said, this is to introduce them as an official couple at this point. You know, later during the reception, there's a tradition called the... dollar dance, in which anyone and that's why I said it's in different traditions, but anyone can wait in line to dance with the bride and groom, pin money to them, and this is done in order to give a blessing and a small financial boost for the newlyweds. Then later there's a tradition that I was very much a part of as a kid called La Entrega, which directly translated means the delivery. In this tradition, a singer will sing both traditional and improvised verses to bring to the bride and groom, while party guests also watch and participate. The sung verses are usually about congratulating, jokingly reprimanding, and blessing the newlyweds. I used to play the violin, and my dad would play guitar, and he's the one that would write these kind of verses. Wait,
your dad?
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's fun.
Like I said, something you probably didn't know about.
No, me. I had no idea.
Yeah, so... And there you have some very fun and interesting cultural traditions surrounding love and marriage.
Oh, was your dad a singer as well?
Yeah.
Why? How?
He's the reason I became a musician.
He's
been playing guitar since like forever.
Oh, wow. I guess I maybe should have asked about that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I just always pictured, you know, you said like your parents always just sitting around the TV and watching it.
No.
But I never fathomed them having any other type of life before that.
Oh my God.
They just kind of erupted in my head sitting in front of the TV watching it.
No, not exactly.
All right. So we're on to our stories.
Yes.
A couple of stories. Okay. I am going to be talking about, mm-hmm. we're going to China, and I'm going to be talking about Chinese ghost marriages. And this is one of those stories that is the reason I love the podcast, because you start diving into
the
a topic.
The only reason.
That's the only reason. This is the reason I like the podcast. I am my co-host. I mean.
Whatever.
Actually, he makes good drinks. This is one of the many reasons that I love it is whenever you go into a topic and it just kind of unravels into this wonderfully interesting
mess. Yeah, because you just think it's like this little thing, and then as you start digging, and you're like, what the fuck?
I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 links for this, because I was like, okay, so get into some backstory. So this is going to be two halves, and you'll see kind of how they're divided up whenever I get to the end of this. But often labeled bare branches and leftover women, Chinese bachelors and bachelorettes face immense societal pressure to get married and have children. It says partly because parents play a central role in their children's spouse selection.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it like arranged marriages, you know, and stuff. They place virtually every single bit of importance on adult life on being married. Mm. And it means that those Chinese who have not yet married are actually accounted virtually no importance. If someone dies while single, they are often thrown out, either literally or figuratively, and are not even allowed a place in the family graveyards.
What?
Yeah, so it's like, you're not married, you have no worth in Chinese society.
That's bullshit.
Yeah, because graveyards like that, the family graveyards, belong exclusively to those who are mated. Yeah. So I'm like, So in some parts of China, some parents go as far as to perform what are called ghost marriages. That is, they perform a marriage for two deceased people. So they marry two deceased people.
Uh-huh.
And there are lots of reasons why you want to do this. One of them is so that they can live in the netherworld together, according to one 3,000-year-old belief. So one of them is just, we don't want you to be lonely in the afterlife, so we're going to actually have a partner for you there. But in addition to that, there are some really other interesting reasons. Number one, because Chinese custom dictates that younger brothers should not marry before their elder brothers, a ghost marriage for an older deceased brother may be arranged just prior to a younger brother's wedding to avoid incurring the disfavor of his brother's ghost.
That's bizarre.
Isn't that wild? Yeah. So your older brother dies. Well, he's still got to be married if he was single for you to get married. So you got to do a ghost marriage for him.
What?
Other reasons. The marriage is often prompted by a dream and some other perceived communication with the dead person. There are actually books about these, and one of them relates the story of a 14-year-old Cantonese boy who died. A month later, he appeared to his mother in a dream, saying that he wished to marry a girl who had recently died nearby.
I'm like, was he old enough to be married at 14? Well,
he was. I know, right? And that's, I mean, they guess they marry younger. Well, the son didn't reveal her name, but his mother used a female spirit medium and through the boy talking to the medium, found the name of the girl together with her place of birth and her age and the details of her horoscope, which were subsequently found. They found the girl. They found that the things were true. And they found her somehow to be compatible. And so they performed a ghost marriage between the two.
That is bizarre.
Isn't that wild? Another reason is some elderly Chinese still believe that if people die without fulfilling their wishes, such as getting married, they will not rest peacefully, and they may return to haunt other people.
Interesting.
And so it's like, you know, basically it's this belief that you can't be happy unless you're married, you know, that old belief. And so you got to find a wife, even if you're dead, or a spouse. The final reason I have here is that if a son died before marriage, his parents would arrange a ghost marriage in order to provide him with progeny to continue the lineage and give him his own descendants. So let's talk about that.
What?
Okay. So once the deceased son has a wife, the family then could adopt an heir because now he's considered married. Mm-hmm. So they can adopt someone, but that person would actually be considered the married couple's son. So they could adopt it in the dead couple's honor. So now it's their grandson and it will continue on the family line.
That is insane.
Yeah. Okay.
And complicated.
So how would your dead self, your dad, get fixed up with someone, right? Well, one, matchmaker, dig me up a corpse. If a family wishes to arrange a ghost marriage, they may consult with a matchmaker of sorts.
Yeah.
In a Cantonese area of Singapore, there is, in fact, a ghost marriage broker sign hung up in a doorway of a priest's home. The broker announces that he is willing to undertake the search for a family which has a suitable deceased member. So it's kind of like, come in. We have we have a match for your dead family member.
He has like a portfolio of all these dead people that list like their education. They're like all that stuff.
It's like a sperm donor.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
For your dead spouse. And it actually has a picture of them in their grave.
Oh my God.
And you can be like, how attractive. So you find your lucky dead spouse. How does this ceremony work?
Yeah.
You might be wondering. Okay. The ceremony itself takes on characteristics of both a marriage and a funeral, with the spirit of the deceased bride being led by a medium or priest while her body is transferred from her grave to be laid next to her husband. Okay. So they actually dig her up where she was buried, and they move her into another grave to be closer to the husband.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought they brought her to the ceremony.
Yeah, no.
That would be, I was like, ew, no.
It's like Weekend at Bernie's. He's like, hi.
Yeah.
They make him kiss. Sometimes they dig up both corpses and they bury them together in new graves. Now, during the ritual, many of the typical marriage rites are observed. However, since the parties are dead, they are sometimes represented by effigies made of paper, bamboo, or cloth. For instance, a ghost couple at their marriage feast, the bride and groom may be constructed of paper bodies over a bamboo frame with paper mache heads. On either side of them stand their respective paper servants, and the room itself will contain paper effigies of
the whole family,
products you would want to give them for their marriage, like a refrigerator or furniture. So there's literally paper furniture decorating the room, you know, that you would give them. After digging about on this some more, I then found out that's well done, that both parties don't have to be deceased.
So somebody alive could marry a dead person. Marry a ghost, obviously.
Correct. Yeah. So upon the death of her fiancé, a bride could choose to go through with the wedding. Mm-hmm. So her husband dies before they're married. So her fiancé, she could go ahead and say, I'm going to go ahead and get married. Mm-hmm. In which case, the groom is represented by a white cockerel at the ceremony. However, some women are hesitant since this form of ghost marriage require her to participate in the funeral ritual mourning customs, which includes taking a vow of celibacy for life and immediately taking up residence with his family.
Okay.
And this introduces the horrible, ridiculous sexism. A groom has the option of marrying his dead fiancé if it's a woman, with no disadvantages whatsoever. So he can just move on and have sex and do whatever he wants.
So it's, yeah.
Yep. So how would you find someone, a partner in this instance? Because it doesn't just have to be a woman or a man who's alive marrying their dead fiance. They can marry anyone. Well, this is so, it's really amazing. It's crazy. It's a crazing. Typically, the family lays a red envelope as bait in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
Then they hide. So they take hiding. And when the envelope is picked up by a passerby, they come out and announce that person's status as being chosen as the bridegroom of the dead body.
What?
Yeah. So it's really strange. This seems kind of harmless other than the sexism, but that's the first half. And the second half, it is going to take a turn and it is going to get a lot darker.
Wow. That is bizarre.
It is the weirdest thing.
Not trying to offend anybody. These are called are obviously traditions that we Westerners are not familiar with. But yeah. It is wow.
It's just
out there.
It's out there. There you go.
Hey there, fellow true crime aficionados. We are the host of Bad Acts Podcast. I'm Danielle,
and I'm Aaron.
Join us every Thursday for twisted true crime tales, bad deeds, and the supernatural. We've covered family annihilators, cold-blooded baby daddies, cannibals, and even people who blame zombies, ghosts, and voodoo for their bad acts.
Bad acts.
If you like fresh stories and new perspectives on crime, Bad Acts will be your new jam. Stay safe out there, you big baddies, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, I'm sure we all have heard the urban legend surrounding the murderer with a hook for a hand or some derivative thereof. If not, I will just sum it up for you very shortly. It's basically a story about a murderer with a hook for a hand that will attack couples at makeout point or lover's lane, whatever you want to call it. In the version that I remember, a couple make out on lover's lane, hear strange noises like scraping noises around the car. The girl gets scared and tells the boy to drive off. And when they get home, they find a bloody hook hanging from the car door. There are different variations of the story, but little did I know the urban legend has some truth to it. This urban legend would not appear until sometime in the 1950s or 60s, but it is this incident that I'm talking about that may have inspired the story. I'm talking about what today is known as the Texarkana Moonlight Murders.
Texarkana?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
These incidents were a number of murder cases that occurred in and around Texarkana in 1946. If the name did not give it away, Texarkana is a city in Texas on the border of Arkansas and Texas.
Yep.
These murders have been attributed to a serial killer only known as the Phantom Killer or the Phantom Slayer. So-called because, as one man put it, quote, if the SOB continues to elude capture, he certainly can be called a phantom.
Oh, wow.
Now, let me jump right into the incidents that occurred. The first incident would happen on February 22nd, 1946, around 11:45 p.m. that night. At that time, a 24-year-old called Jimmy Hollis and his 19-year-old girlfriend, Mary Jean, had just finished a movie and decided to make a quick detour to the local Lover's Lane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not even 10 minutes after being parked, a man approached Jimmy's window, shining a flashlight on the couple. The man was said to be wearing a white cloth mask akin to a pillowcase with holes for the eyes cut out.
Ooh, like a KKK member almost.
Almost, yeah. Jimmy was rightfully unsure about this guy and told the man he had the wrong people. The man responded with, quote, "I don't want to kill you, fellow, just so do what I say."
Oh, shit.
Yeah. After getting the couple out of the car and demanding Jimmy remove his pants, the man struck him.
Remove his pants?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
The man struck him in the head twice, actually, once with a gun. Gene freaked out, obviously, assuming he wanted money, showed the man Jimmy's wallet, proving that they had nothing worth taking, you know. In return, the man then struck her, then demanded she stand up. When she did, the man told her to run up the road. The man, of course, chased her down, assaulted her. And somehow she was able to escape and made it to a home about half a mile away where she woke the people living there to call the police.
Good for her.
At that same time, Jimmy regained consciousness and stopped a passing driver who would also call the police. Again, it's 1946. By the time the police arrived, it was 30 or so minutes later.
Oh, yeah. They had to take, like, horses.
Yeah. And by that time, you know, the attacker, of course, had left. So fast forward a month and a few days later. On March 24th, same year, a 29-year-old man called Richard L. Griffin and his 17-year-old girlfriend of 6 weeks called Polly Ann Moore were found dead in Richard's car by a driver passing by.
Shit.
Yeah. The car was found by the driver parked on a different, quote, lover's lane than the first couple.
Is it in the same area?
Yeah.
How many lover's lanes are in this town? I know. It's like what slut else? Town.
There's nothing else to do in Texarkana, apparently.
Oh, that's true.
It was found that Richard had been shot twice while in the car. Both of the deceased had been shot once in the back of the head, at least.
Ugh.
Based on some evidence found outside of the car, it was believed that the couple had been killed outside of the car, then placed back in it. Not some 3 weeks later, on April 14th, around 1:30 a.m., a 17-year-old boy called Paul Martin picked up his 15-year-old girlfriend, Betty Jo Booker, from the local VFW club after a performance she had. 5 hours later, at 6:30 a.m., Paul's body was found lying on its left side. It was concluded that he had been shot 4 times, through his nose, through his ribs,
ew,
in his right hand, and through the back of his neck.
Oh, my God.
Betty Jo was found 5 hours later at 11:30 a.m. behind a tree about 2 miles away from Paul's body. She had been shot 2 times through the chest and in the face.
Ugh.
It was found that the same weapon was used in the previous incident as in this current one. Investigators were unable to determine who was shot first, but said it seemed that both of them had put up quite a fight. A few weeks later, on May 3rd, a little before 9 p.m., a 37-year-old man called Virgil Starks and his 36-year-old wife, Katie, were spending what seemed like a normal evening at home when Virgil was shot twice in the back of the head.
Oh, so they weren't even at a lover's lane?
No,
or
they were at home at the farm.
Well, maybe because of the way the town is, even their house was like a lover's lane.
Yeah, so he was shot twice in the back of the head through a closed window. Katie, hearing the glass break, went to see what happened and found Virgil dead.
So this person hates couples, like he's bitter or jealous or anything?
We'll kind of get to that, sort of.
Oh, okay, okay.
She attempted to call the police. And
Chris, was it you?
Oh, whatever. And in the process, was shot twice in the face.
Fuck.
From the same window. Despite being shot, this badass woman attempted to get a gun from another room.
Get it!
She could hear the killer coming, which prompted her to run across the street to her sister's house.
Oh my God, badass!
She could hear the killer coming, which forced her, to her sister's house. Unfortunately, her sister was not home at the time.
Oh, fuck.
So she ran to another neighbor.
Wow!
The neighbor was there. He alerted a different neighbor who then drove Katie to the hospital.
And she survived?
Yes, she did survive.
Wow. Yeah, badass bitch. Get it, girl.
And there, I will leave you with a cliffhanger.
Ah!
Because there's so much information about this story that I just couldn't leave it for just one.
So, okay. You might get into this. Did they confirm that the very first couple who both of them survived, mm-hmm, was it was the same person? Because it's weird that all the other were so easily shot and killed, and those two were kind of like, maybe it was like his trial run.
And there was some, there's some suspects around that, and I'll talk a little bit about that in part two.
Wow, that girl, that get it. Okay.
Yeah, she's a badass.
Can't wait to hear. All right, so part two of Chinese ghost marriages, this is where it gets dark. So the practice of ghost marriages was actually banned as far back as imperial times.
Really?
Yeah, but many people continue the practice in secrecy, surviving records show. Oh, yeah, to this day. Okay. Because you'll hear, when unmarried men or women died, their parents would hire, like I said, a matchmaker to help them marry suitable corpses and bury them together. Now, it's becoming increasingly clear that they're not supposed to be doing this, right? Uh-huh. Well, it's often difficult for parents to find a match who died close to the time that their own child did. So gradually, matchmaking businesses catering to ghost marriages sprang up. One matchmaker with 30 years experience told the China News Weekly that the market has flourished over the years. In the 1990s, a match would cost around 5,000 yuans.
Okay.
And in the 2000s, it grew to 50,000 won.
Yeah.
By 2010, 100,000 won would only ensure a basic match. And by 2016, you couldn't even buy a bone for less than 150,000 won, which is 23,000 US dollars.
That's insane.
Yeah. So where does this lead? You could probably guess. Gradually, theft and even murder developed to serve growing demand for ghost marriages. Families kept an eye on hospitals and funeral homes and struck deals with staff, handing over money in return for fresh corpses.
What?
Yeah. On a surge in the illegal trade of corpse brides in China, it was reported that Chinese villagers are willing to pay as much as $26,000 for female corpses they can bury with their dead unmarried male relative, so that they can actually be buried in the same graveyard, because otherwise they couldn't. China News Weekly reported that from 2013 to 2016, 27 female corpses were dug up and stolen from their graves at just one small town in China alone.
Oh, that is crazy.
In one encounter, police in northern China detained three people suspected of stealing a woman's corpse to sell as a bride in this ancient ritual. The news agency said the main suspect had heard about the death of a young woman in a nearby village and thought of selling the corpse to a relatives of a dead single man. Now, they said that three suspects pretended to be relatives of the woman and negotiated a sale price of $4,000, that's American dollars, with a buyer. But while raiding a tomb for the body, they were caught by villagers and the whole thing was thwarted. In another incident, a family sold their recently deceased daughter for $35,000 to a man, Mr. Liu, who saw her as a perfect match for his recently deceased brother.
Yeah.
A spirit wedding was conducted, and the two were buried together. So people are even profiting off of their dead children in this.
Consumerism at its finest.
Right, exactly, right? So Mr. Liu later found, though, that his brother's grave, after this happened, so he buys this, buries it with his brother, the grave had been raided, and the already dead and purchased dead sister-in-law had vanished. Police discovered that there was a planned elopement with a whole different corpse groom from another town.
Yeah.
And a gang of five was caught attempting. They dug up the body of the girl who was purchased. They dug her up, and they were going to sell her for 30,000 won, which was a discount of 5,000 won from the previous sale. The discount reflecting several days of mild putrefaction.
Gross.
So it's like the fresher the dead body, the more that it's worth.
This is awful.
Yeah. So in 2015, it was reported that 14 female corpses were stolen from another village in the province alone.
Ew.
And it gets worse.
Ew.
In the face of high profit, some have turned to the living to
find my potential spouses. Oh my God, so they murder people and then...
A man arrested in Inner Mongolia, this is last year, told police officers that he murdered a woman so that he could make money by selling her body to a family looking for a ghost bride.
That's fucked up.
A court document provided in Northwest China shows that a man, so this is somebody else, murdered two mentally ill women and stole their bodies for ghost marriages. He was found guilty of murder and sentenced to death earlier this year.
That's awful.
And finally, the increasing sums of money involved here, you know, how much you're making, mm-hmm. have even prompted some to commit serial murder. One man explained after his arrest in 2007 for strangling and selling six women that, ready for this, is finishing up the whole thing, that, quote, killing women and selling their bodies is less work than stealing them from their graves.
Ugh.
And that is a long story of ghost marriages
That's
in China.
Fucked up.
Oh.
Little did we know that this episode was going to be so morbid.
Oh, right. I know. Oh, I just cannot believe that. Marrying a dead person, just, I don't know, the whole thing. Y'all heard it.
And then all the money, like, yeah. Oh my God, it's turned into a business.
It's turned into a business. Yeah. Yep.
It's like dark web shit.
It really is dark web shit. And I'm sure there probably are websites and shit that have sprung up.
Or mafia shit, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's all right, let's hear the second half of this shit that you have going on with your murders.
So now that I've covered the victims of the Phantom Slayer, I'll talk a little bit about the investigation and the aftermath.
Okay.
There were a large amount of people involved in the investigation, too many to mention here, but needless to say, the town was in a frenzy. So many people wanted this case to be solved as quickly as possible. Obviously, I mean, it's the
40s.
A
bunch of horny teenagers were like,
"Oh, that
solve
too."
Solve this fastly.
Yeah, the first two victims, Jimmy Hollis and Mary Jean Larry, were prime witnesses since they claimed to have details of the man in the pillowcase mask. That being said, their stories didn't match up, which led investigators to believe that they may have known the attacker, who the attacker was,
ooh,
and were covering for him.
Shit.
I will just say this. Both their descriptions seem to be racially motivated as they spoke.
Oh, fuck.
And this is absolutely no excuse, but then again, it was 1940s Texarkana. So,
ugh.
Yeah. Since this was the first attack, the investigation was not as widespread, thinking it might just be a one-off, you know? When the murders of Richard Griffin and Polly Ann Moore took place, the investigation spread further to include both Texas and Arkansas police. A number of people were questioned, with three being taken into custody after finding bloody clothes on them. Eventually, all three were set free with no way to pin the crime on them.
Well, so how were the bloody clothes?
I have no idea. It didn't explain in my research.
They're like,
why.
Ooh, I slipped.
Yeah. After the murders of Paul Martin and Betty Jo Booker, many more people were questioned, including family and friends, and even some people who lived as far away as 100 miles.
Wow.
Investigators attempted to set up a decoy by having teenagers sit in parked cars in or near
Rose Lane
while police hid nearby.
Okay, that's actually a really good idea.
That's crazy. That's like, oh my God, that'd be scary.
That would be very scary.
Yeah. Following the murder of Virgil Starks, investigations got more intense to the point that parts of the highway were blocked off. You know, people were being searched, etc. After that murder, there were a total of 47 officers working diligently to catch the killer.
Damn.
Yeah. That being said, officers hesitated to link the murder to the other incidents because the weapon in the last one was different from every other incident, you know?
Okay.
Eventually, Virgil's murder would not be considered to be connected to the other two.
Wild. Yeah. That's the one through the window?
Yeah, that was
the last one. What did the wife say who was shot and made it?
I don't have that in my notes. You'll have to look that up.
Good half-ass story. Just kidding.
Oh, well, officers found that no money or valuables were taken in any of these cases. And as a result, they theorized that the motive for killing was, quote, sex mania, as they called it. In efforts to catch the killer, a reward was put out for $500 at first, which in today's money would be a little over $7,000.
Okay.
That reward would eventually get up to $10,000, which in today's money would be around $150,000.
Ooh, damn. Okay. Yeah.
Public reaction to the incidents, as one could guess, were one of much fear and hysteria. As a result of the incidents, there was a curfew put in place and businesses were made to close early to avoid having people out and about after sundown.
Damn.
Despite there not being any internet or social media, there was a lot of media coverage of the incidents, which only added to the public's reaction. So on the radio, in the newspaper, it just got even worse.
Of course.
Much like today's headlines back then, the media perpetuated fear. For example, one paper stated that the killer could strike again at any moment, place, and could attack anyone. it was also the media that would first call the incident the Moonlight Murders, despite the first incidents occurring after a full moon and the last happening around the new moon. They just wanted a cool name for it.
Yeah.
As was the norm back in that time period, doors to homes were often left unlocked, but not so much following these incidents, obviously. Residents were now taking extra precautions for fear of being the Phantom Killer's next victim. So much so that stores began to sell out of such things as guns, ammunition, locks, and all that
amulets.
Stuff. Yes. Additionally, there were even ads seen in the paper a lot for guard dogs. You know, people are trying to...
Do you know what? I would put ads in as a divorce lawyer and be like, he's only coming for couples. Oh. So if you want a separation, you're going to be safer. So come to me.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't think of that.
Huh.
Due to the community being overtly armed, this area became pretty damn dangerous with anyone willing to take a shot at any sudden move.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Right.
The danger was so bad that cops had to make sure and announce themselves before approaching a home for being the fear of being shot.
Oh, themselves. My God. Yeah. Wow.
Although many residents lived in fear and paranoia, staying put in their homes, younger generations started their own vigilante search, putting themselves in harm's way on lover's lanes and other deserted areas in hopes of catching the killer. Since there were only two supposed descriptions of the killer, investigators had practically nothing to go on, which would result in close to 400 suspects being arrested when all was said and done.
Shit.
Not one would come to any kind of conclusive lead. And to this day, no one knows or has come forward with the identity of the Phantom Killer.
Wow.
For many horror fans like myself, if the story sounds a little familiar, this is because a movie based on one of the officers' investigations came out in 1976 called The Town That Dreaded Sundown. In 2014, a movie with the same name came out that is more of a sequel. And since 2003, the original film has been screened every year for an event called Movies in the Park in Texarkana.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And there you have the story of the Phantom Killer and the Texarkana Moonlight Murders.
Wow. So that's probably one of those situations where they probably interviewed the real killer.
Yeah. Or he was there in the background, you know, just like hanging about watching this. But nothing related to this happened after that last incident.
Oh, that's
interesting. Or that they could connect, you know. So who knows?
Wow. Wow. Okay. Wow. Crazy. Crazy, crazy. All right. So
have you been to Texarkana?
I had never have. I actually know an author there who's going to be at an event with me this month.
Yeah. Tell them about this.
I'm going to ask her about it.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk to her about it.
Yeah.
All right, so this is going to be, and actually it's fine because we had lots of information. Mm-hmm. This is going to be one of my shortest skeptics ever. I was really curious about why there was such a need for female corpses because, and I don't know, I guess I was just like, why are all these guys dying and they're not getting married? I don't know. It was just interesting to me. And
do they believe in polyamory in the afterlife? Oh. Is that why?
This guy has like 40 brides.
Yeah.
Off, and he's
40
like,
gross brides. Ghost.
Yeah,
gross.
40 ghost.
I said gross brides. Ghost.
40 gross brides. I mean, that's pretty accurate. But I found a couple of interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
So in some districts of China where the murders are alleged for this, there are large numbers of young unmarried men working in coal mining, where fatalities are really super high.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have this town where all these coal miners are dying. It's like, oh shit, you know, they didn't have time to get married. So we got to take care of this. But sex ratios are also significant. The 2014 census results show that about 116 boys were born for every 100 girls. And so you have, and I think in China, you value having boys over girls. And so I guess it makes sense. But so you have so many more boys than girls that there's just not enough girls to go around.
That makes sense. Yeah. I never gathered that at all. Never made that connection.
Yep. And so I thought that was really, really interesting.
So my story today was basically one big believer about how a true crime spawned an urban legend. So I wanted to look into the urban legend itself. As can probably be concluded, the story is a cautionary tale about the dangers of teenage sex.
Mm.
As my research states, quote, unspoken in the story is the realization that if she hadn't said no, the couple would have been killed, unquote. I would like to also point out the underlying feminist ideals in the story, especially the fact that the girl does say no.
Mm.
And thanks to her, that is the reason the couple survives.
Damn. Oh, I love that.
So why is this urban legend and urban legends in general so popular? I've mentioned this in a podcast before, but I thought it was worth mentioning again. According to psychology, such stories are a way for us to make sense of the world and manage threats in what we have perceived to be a safe environment. Additionally, for believers like myself, myths act as proof and reinforce beliefs that already exist, which is important in validating and legitimizing personal worldviews and fears. As useful as the internet and social media are and have become, both have also blurred the line between what is real and what is an urban legend. So as I always say, be leery of what you hear and or read. As one person put it, quote, "History suggests urban legends will always find ways to evolve and prevail. Unfortunately, false news may prove similarly hard to eradicate," unquote. What? Your mouth is full.
Of delicious strawberry goodness.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Wow, what an interesting episode.
So out of left field, not what I was expecting.
No, but I kind of dig it. I want to hear what people think about that. And
yeah.
I love that. Again,
and like I said,
ironically, coincidentally, we have a couple of stories for an episode about couples.
Yeah, so it was all the way around weird in a good way. So
yeah, I love it.
And there's no creep of the week this week because I forgot. I don't know why. Like, I was doing my research and I totally like just blanked on it. So I did pull up something, but like I think we've talked a lot today, so I think it's not necessary.
Oh yeah, we're good. We spend a lot of time talking about cool stuff, so I don't think we need one right now.
Yeah. So with that, thank you everybody for listening. As always, you know where you can find us. You're obviously subscribing to us, I hope, if you're listening to us.
Yippee!
If you have any stories of your own, if you have any weird incidents at Lover's Lane, email them to us at bspod@gmail.com.
Spare no details.
And if you want to follow us on social media, same username, at bspodphx. God, I'm fucking up all over the place today.
What's happening?
I know, and I don't even drink anymore. What is happening here? But
bspod, it's his lotion on the
It's not lotion.
And
with that, also have a good Valentine's Day, I guess, if you like it or whatever, or if you have somebody to celebrate it with. All right.
Inspiring.
Yes.
And my books, The Gay Teen's Guide to Defeating a Siren, as always, are available. And I think Chris said it so beautifully just now. We'll let y'all go. And if you like Valentine's Day or whatever, or kind of want to celebrate it or not, we hope you have a lovely time either way. And
bye. Bye.
Again next time.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.